I'm nervous now to fuck up the last one, and then they got into the end. So now I'm really nervous. Hello and welcome to Ex-Old Eagles. My name's Rob Seltzer, and much like the Palace squad, we are not getting any younger. With today, we have the usual likely lads. We have Dale Quarty in soon-to-be lockdown. Sydney, how are you, Dale?
Good, thank you very much.
Mark Werner in Free as a Bird, Queensland. How are you, Mark?
Good evening, Robert. I'm well, gentlemen.
And nicely locked down, which is good for the human race, Ned Rock. You are nicely locked down in Melbourne. So how are you, Ned?
Yeah, look, I can't argue with that. Yeah, I'm all right.
Barbers in Melbourne either.
Yeah, because I frequently go to the barber all the time, Dale. It's,
yeah, definitely.
I put almost as much time into my hair as Mamadou Sakho puts into his. So,
ooh,
that's how we're gonna start.
That's how we're gonna start. Yeah.
Early.
Yeah. That's how. Sure. I like
it. Unbelievable. All right, fellas, we're gonna start on a rather serious note. I'm sure everyone that listens to this pod and is not a Palace fan knows exactly what happened with Wilf yesterday with the abhorrent messages he got sent. I just mentioned it before, but on this pod, we have three middle-class white guys. We probably never have any experience of the type of abuse and disgusting behaviour that is. So I'm going to go over to Dale and just make your thoughts on it. As a black man living in the world and seeing that type of stuff, and the fact that who cares is a 12-year-old. I don't care that it's a 12-year-old kid that does that. I think that's okay to send stuff like that to anyone on planet Earth.
So I'll keep it short, so I will. It is wrong. We all know it is wrong. I agree with Wilf that he showed it to the world, because I think that sort of stuff needs to be called out. It's kind of... I don't know if ironic is the right word, but just in the current climate of everyone kneeling before every game, Black Lives Matter on your T-shirts, or certainly your playing shirts, or Black Lives Matter on the side of the pitch. Great timing. I mean, ridiculous. As a 12-year-old, I'm trying to think what I was like at 12, and I don't think I'm even savvy enough to do any of that, or even know what it means. So I want to give that 12-year-old the benefit of the doubt. Parents and friends have to be spoken to and held to task. So I think that sort of stuff comes from them. It doesn't... I saw someone yesterday on Facebook saying this is our typical Villa, this is disgusting. It's nothing to do with Villa. This is an individual who's done something stupid. And it's wrong. And it's sad that it happens in this day and age. It continues to happen in this day and age. And it sort of makes it worthwhile with everything we're doing at the moment. All the protesting, all the social movements, everything that's happening, it just sort of makes it worthwhile and shows it. But unfortunately, shows we've got a long way to go until we change people's attitudes. And I'll leave it at that.
Very, very well said, sir. Very well said indeed. Think about what I was like at 12 and knowing that you said you wouldn't be... I know for a fact that Mark wouldn't have been technically savvy enough to do that even at his tender age now, let alone been able to do anything on any type of social media platform to send it to anyone at 12 years old. Exactly. He's like, Insta who? Who's Graham? All right. So since we last plotted, when we last plotted, we were talking about Palace as the best team that have come back out of the lockdown.
Sorry.
You were. I'm a collective. I'm tarnishing you all with the same brush here. Since then, it's been proven that we weren't, and we're not. Have you seen, honestly, has anyone seen, and I'm not going to tell you, anyone can jump in first here, but have you seen a worse 3 or 4 game run as a Palace fan? Period.
Absolutely.
That you've actually had to sit and watch consecutive games that have been that bad, that boring, and that similar in all the same shit.
When you say that bad and that boring and consecutive, I think which games are we talking about? Because Chelsea was actually quite good.
That was a blip.
Bournemouth was quite good, and there's only three other games.
We've done Bournemouth.
So you're talking Liverpool, three games. You're talking Burnley, three games out of five. So you're talking game against Liverpool, who are Burnley, best team in the world.
Leicester.
So you got team who's the best team in the world trying to play to win the league. You got Leicester who are in the top four. You got Burnley who lost 1-0. Then you got Villa, which was shot. They weren't good. Don't get me wrong. They weren't good. But I think you still need to sort of go. I mean, just to take you back to your initial point of, I don't think any of us here after the Bournemouth game thought we were the best team in the league. However, of all of those teams that played in that first round coming back, we looked better than a lot of other teams. The second game back after it, we looked absolute dog shit and continued along that vein for a bit. But, I mean, I think it's one of those things that we, as a club, generally over the Christmas period, we don't have a squad that's deep enough. And effectively, we're having basically two Christmas periods this year. And our squad is just not deep enough to deal with that. Obviously, you know, Roy's not a huge fan of the old rotation of players. Why that is either he's super stubborn or all of our players are shit. None of us will know that. But anyway, I think it's just one of those ones where we are safe. There isn't a whole lot to play for. And I think there's a lot of people who were getting super excited about us as European chances a month ago who've now decided that Roy should be sacked. And he said, not you, Rob. Obviously, you thought Roy should be sacked for the last 3 years. That's okay. But I just think, yeah, you're sitting there going, you know, we'll go on another run at some point and everyone will go, oh, it's fine and it's great and we're going to win the league again. That run probably won't be till next year. But, you know, you sort of sit there and go, well, yeah, we've been a bit shit for a few games, but it's not the first time. It won't be the last.
Before I let Dale and Mark jump in, I'm going to have to take issue with a couple of things you said there. There's a lot of the points I'm going to be making when we talk about a certain someone later on who's probably not my favourite
person. Oh, just go now. Just do it now.
No.
Do it now. Get it done with.
I'm saving you all.
No, do it now. Get it done with. I'm just going to edit it in now anyway.
Now, because you mentioned, okay, Liverpool, I'll give you that. Liverpool going to win the league and I'll give you Liverpool. We played a Leicester team that have been poor and we gave them far too much. Didn't even try. Didn't even look like we were going to try. We played a Burnley team who had basically the whole attack out. We didn't even look like didn't even have a go there. We played an awful Villa team and made them look good.
Well, if their whole attack's out, why are we talking about it being hard for us to score?
Because they have to move things around.
The defence was now.
Mate, they've had to move stuff around and we made them look brilliant. Leicester poor. So I was shown yesterday when they lost 4-1 to Bournemouth. So they were poor. They weren't in good form, and we let them do what they want. And Villa yesterday was like the treasure. I haven't turned off much at many games early ever, and last night I turned it off early. But anyway, so I disagree with those points you're making there about, you know, who they're playing. Form, it's a whole new thing. Form, I got Sheffield United wrong. I'll put that up. Form's different now. I don't think if you're top four, Leicester weren't in good form when we played them. Anyway. Mark, Dale, what are your thoughts? Do you side with Ned? We're saying, you know, whatever, or do you think it's been not good enough?
Yeah, I'll have a punt. It's just been terrible football to watch. I know a lot of the guys on Facebook and different groups and that are all on exciting football. And I know the reality of the matter is with our squad and budgets and that sort of thing, that's probably not going to happen a great deal, but you'd like just to have a bit of a go. And I haven't even seen that much lately, with the exception of Chelsea. I thought we all had a good dig there. Sacco came in early, Cahill's injury. Thought he played all right. Okay, it was terrible the other few games prior to that, but it's been pretty bad, like just really bad to watch, to be honest. And you know, everyone's on the beach, we're safe, so you know, I guess no one's busting a gut to bust a gut. and it's showing on the pitch. Unlucky with, you know, Sacco's goal, Dan's header. They got tipped onto the post and came back out. So there's a few sort of fleeting instances that could have changed the dynamics of where we are. But, yeah, ultimately, it's just same old, isn't it? Is bloody is same team, is same subs for the same people at the same time. And, yeah, not hard to work out.
No. Dale?
I don't know. I'm at a loss, right? Because Roy's come in. He came in terrible circumstances. And, you know, we have no right to be where we are. And it is basically down to him. And that buys him a lot of credit. I texted a mate yesterday and I said, when he brings on McCarthy from MacArthur, I'm going to bed. And then at half time, I said, I can't go to bed. Yeah, I thought I'd do a podcast tomorrow. I couldn't buy it. I was just shocked it was so early.
It was an injury, though.
Well, it was an injury, but therein lies the problem, Ned. The performance was no different to any of the others. Regardless of what we want to say, if you want to turn around and say Bournemouth was good or bad, whatever. If you want to say the others were good or bad, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, everything was following the same pattern. We're 1-0 down against a team who've only scored 2 goals in 8 games, right? In their last 8. And what do we do when we're 1-0 down at half-time? And we have to make a sub. We brought on another defensive midfielder for defensive midfielder. And I'm not saying he should have brought on Townsend and gone 4 up top or whatever. But, you know, if you're going to play, it's a perfect time to play a 10. Because you need, so you know it, Ned, you're a coach, right? You've got 2 holding midfielders. That gives a 10 a license to do something, right? And we needed something. I get it. We don't know if Meyer's the answer. And you know why we don't know if Meyer's the answer? We haven't seen him enough, right? Every time he's come on with 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes to go, he's buzzed around. He's looked decent. And that's, you know what? That's all you can ask for, to look decent. Our performances have been woeful. And I'll take the fact that, yes, we're playing Liverpool, who are the greatest team the world's ever seen, blah, blah, blah. But as we said, remember at the start, midway through the season, before Christmas, we had a run of 5 really bad games. We had 5 tough games in a row. And I sat on this parish and I said, it doesn't matter if we lose them all, it's how you lose that's important. And at the moment, we are losing in a very meek and shy way. I don't care if Liverpool beat us 4-0, because if we harried Liverpool and we put them under pressure and we try to do something. But you know what? We didn't do anything. Losing Wilf early, I get it. It makes it tough. Doesn't matter though, because one day there will be no Wilf. Whether he gets sold, whether he's retired, whether he's too busy shacked up with his missus, it doesn't matter. One day there will be no Wilf, so we can't use it as an excuse. So for me, I don't care that we lose. It's how we lose that's really important. And for us as exiled Eagles, I'd rather see us have a go and lose at 1 o'clock in the morning than the meat crap we're getting.
Very, very much so. And that is, Dale, that is a nail on head. It's how we lose. I said, I don't care about losing. See, we've got nothing to play for this season. I'm not expecting the players to be playing as if their life depends on it, like we've seen over the past 6 seasons when we've had to just stay up at the end of the year. I'm not expecting that at all. But we played a Villa team yesterday that had 2 days less rest than us. We didn't harry them. We didn't pressure them. We didn't make them run around a bit to tire them out. So the last 20 minutes would have been fairly cruisy because they'd have been knackered. Same with Burnley. We didn't do it. And we're just, it's powder puff and it's shit. There is no other ways about it, which leads me into my next point, which is going to be my favourite point of all time. So I'm going to let you all have your say first, because I've got a ton to say. Because I want to see, I actually want to see what you guys think of this, to generally do. But do you think, like, as Dale said, Roy has credit in the bank. I know we laugh and joke that I've wanted him out for a while, and I have. But I also appreciate what he's done for the club. I appreciate that when he came in, we were cannon footed and we were guaranteed to go down. He's performed minor miracles, turned that around. We're a stable mid-table club. But have we hit that ceiling now? Is it time to say, thanks for the memories, Roy. It's been great. You've stabilised us, but we need to move on now. Do you think we're at that stage? Throwing that open to the floor.
I think it's possible that we have hit that stage. However, in terms of the current climate, this is literally the worst time to try and rebuild a team. There's going to be no money that we can spend. We're not going to be able to have a full rebuild. So if you can't have a full rebuild, it's not fun to watch. But with Roy Hodgson, Dale said it before, plenty of us have said it before, it's the safe option. It's boring, but we'll finish 10th to 14th and you get away with it. Survive through this period. Roy retires next year and you then move in with someone and you can possibly try and be a bit more creative, and then they can get sacked and we bring in Nigel Pearson at Christmas and he saves us from relegation and rinse and repeat. But I just think that given everything that's going on at the moment, this is not the time to start going out there and being adventurous, because if it backfires now, we're already going to have no money in the bank. We're not going to be able to get any money from anyone because no one's going to be buying players. So if everything goes to shit, we're going to end up in the Championship, going into administration again, down to League One, League Two, club bust, all those sorts of things. I don't think this is the time to be taking those risks. Give it 12 months? Sure. But he's already got his contract. We're judging a bloke on dead rubbers as opposed to, yes, they've been shit dead rubbers, but they're dead rubbers. I think there's better things. I think we've sort of, got to move on a little bit. If it starts badly next year, okay, sure. But I don't think we can really afford to sort of go drastically changing directions at this point, because if it goes wrong, it's going to go really, really wrong.
All right, that's your opinion, and fair enough.
Are you suggesting you don't disagree with it? You might disagree with it, Rob.
I couldn't disagree more, but anyway. But I respect your opinion. Well, I don't, but I
don't respect yours either. It's fine.
Exactly.
You go now, Rob. I don't think we should let you wait till last, because I know that's what you want. I think we throw you in and then we can finish off with someone sensible.
Someone sensible. Absolute tosh.
Coming off the back fence, that's for sure.
I've had a run up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the pool with flippers on here. In the pool with flippers on. You say it's not a good time to rebuild. I will say it might be a perfect time to start that rebuild, because there's maybe no money around, but there's a lot of clubs that need money. So there's going to be players that are flying around that would last season would have been, I'm just throwing a number out there, £40 million. So this season going to be £15 million. Obviously, I'm not saying we're going to spend that money, but there's going to be players that are a lot less. There's also players that are going to realise that if they're out of contract or they're coming to an end of a contract and need a contract, they probably won't be able to command £120,000, £130,000, £140,000 because the money isn't there to give them. Would I trust... We need to sign people this summer. End of story, it has to happen. Do I trust Roy to bring those players in? No, because Roy wants 27, 28, 29-year-old James McCarthy's. We need 21, 22-year-olds. He doesn't want them. Yeah, if we keep Roy for the extra year, what do we get? We sign three James McCarthy's, and then we've got next season when Roy does go, we've just got a team of plodders. That's all we've got. And then the next guy has to come in and has to do a massive rebuild. Do I want a drastic change of direction? No. But there needs to be someone that comes in with a progression planning, that someone that can think, that can blood the youngsters, that has a plan B. Doesn't have, okay, at 60 minutes, Kiarte comes off, on comes James McCarthy, Nuka will come off, on comes Max Meyer on 75, and Andros Townsend gets a run around for 4 minutes. Guaranteed every game. You said also about we're judging him on dead rubbers. Well, let's go through this season. We'll have Sheffield United home, Sheffield United away. Chelsea away, Spurs away, these four dead rubbers, Southampton at home. All of them, we might as well have not bothered turning up. They were all awful. That's and nine other, games.
Yeah.
And that's nine games.
And the other 29?
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Don't you worry. But that's nine games. That's a quarter of a season. That's nearly a quarter of a season where we might as not have bothered showing. Since October, we have won six games. Since
that's October. That's 3 months off. We've only ever won 14 in a Premier League season once. Maybe twice.
We have scored 14 home goals. Lowest in the Premier League. 14 goals at home. All these type of stats. If this was stats were thrown at Alan Pardew, we were going bananas. Get him out, get him out.
Have a look at the defensive stats.
We'll do. Okay, let's look at the defensive stats.
And Mark and I just head off, get a coffee, and we'll come back in about 5 minutes.
You might as well come back in an hour and a half. We'll
yeah, have a go. Coffee. I'm going to go make a pavlova.
Send us some down, Mark.
You can argue black is white in there, but the facts are in front of you. And my big thing for me is on, and I know we talk about social media and stuff, the tide has completely turned now. The tide has completely turned. There was not one person last night that I saw on social media that was like, no, we've got to give him time. We've got to do it. They're all saying the same thing. It's the same start, the same team. It's the same change. It's the same tactics. It's the same changes. It's the same results. Every single one of them was saying. And there's a lot of people. I mean, I follow mostly Palace people on Twitter. That's just what I do it for. And a lot of these guys are a lot more level-headed than me, which is good because I'm very reactionary and useless. But even those guys are starting to say it's probably time to go now. There is no defending what's happening at the moment. It's indefensible. My question again, what happens? So we're awful at the moment. There's no fans in the stadium. We have a very old squad. The season finishes in 2 or 3 weeks. Then there's a 4 week break? The season starts again. Okay. So it's not as long as a break as we just had. But it's
so
not
even if you
break.
Get a new manager in, they're not going to have time to implement their own philosophy.
Although I reckon there'll be time to get something in and change something. There has to be because we can't go through. We cannot carry on again because our bubble will burst. And I genuinely think you say we're a safe pair of hands under Roy Hodgson with the squad he picks, his stubbornness, his favourites. It doesn't matter if the players are out of form. Who cares? I mean, Luke has been awful since Bournemouth, awful. But he knows we know he'll play next week. He'll play against United. You know, PV might need a rest. We know he'll play. Kiata, we know he'll play. You know, we know IU needs a rest. He needs to. But we know he'll play. That's he won't change anything.
That's because Benteke is bloody not available.
Yeah, but even if he was available, might have had you know he'd play.
Yeah, probably.
Nah, he wouldn't change it. You know for a fact he wouldn't change it. So he's so stubborn, he won't change anything. And so for me, you say he's a safe pair of hands. I am genuinely nervous if Roy Hodgson stays on, nothing will change and we will struggle and potentially go down next season with him in charge. My views. Over to Dale and Mark. And I could have gone on for hours and hours, but I appreciate this. It's not the Robert Seltzer podcast, although I'd love it to be. Anyone listening, I'll do my own one on that later on.
Next.
Look, I'll just be quick, right? The guy's been over here on his contract, so he's staying. Unless he turns around and says, I'm out of here, we know Parrish isn't going to sack him. So it's on Roy. I don't see him changing up much. Benteke being injured, suspended, is a blessing because it means he has to make a change. It's going to be AU up front and Townsend on the right. Maybe McArthur will be injured, which means McCarthy comes in. When the reality is, it would be nice to see Max Meyer get a start, maybe Pierrick start instead of Townsend. And that'd be it. That's what it needs to be. There needs to be anything else more drastic than that. Is he going to go? No, he's not. Is he a safe pair of hands? Yes, he is. Just while you were talking, I brought up the everyone who's on a free transfer from the Premier League, because that's what we're going to be looking at. Slim pickings. If we haven't already got a deal in place for Ryan Fraser, otherwise, the rest of them, not many names you'd hear, you'll know of in here. Ibe, who apparently might be coming, who knows? And any other ones are William, Pedro, and Adam Lallana. You don't want any of those. Well, they fit the bill for Roy. Free transfer for Palace, free transfer and over 30. So,
and we cost a fortune.
Yeah, to sit on our bench. Right.
And this is where I think we've got to look at our scouting networks, because there's clubs out in Europe at the moment that might have like a gem that they're holding on to. Like, I'm just going to use these guys as an example, but I'm not talking about them. Somebody
might be holding on to a striker like an Alexander Sorloth.
Yeah, but like someone like a Sporting Lisbon, where you get a lot of players come out of someone like a Sporting Lisbon. I don't mean Sporting Lisbon, but this is the example I'm using. Yeah. They've got a young kid and they'd normally hold out for 40, 50 million pounds for him. Now, COVID has happened, they'd have to take something like 5 million. Again, I know these are very extreme examples.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. If we put our scouting
network in place, then they're out there. And I guarantee you clubs are going to pick up some beauts from Portugal, Spain, France.
It's not as easy as that. I've got a friend who used to be a scout for Palace. I won't mention any names, because I shouldn't do. It's not as easy as that. And it just doesn't happen like that. We're not a desirable destination, and it's nothing to do with Roy. It is just, we are Crystal Palace. We are a yo-yo club who've just secured Premiership safety for another year. Yeah, granted, but is a reason why these star players, the all-stars in the making, don't go to Palace, Burnley, Stoke when they're in the Premier League. There's a reason why. So, it would be lovely to go to Sporting Lisbon and say, hey, who's your next Cristiano Ronaldo? We'll have him for a year. It just doesn't happen like that.
But I think what Rob's saying there, though, and maybe not taking a Ronaldo type, but in terms of, I would rather us go and try and find another Luka Milivojevic, who's only going to cost us 10 million. And when I say another Luka Milivojevic, I mean of that ilk, not that position. We have enough of those.
Yeah.
But try and find someone for 10 million from a different league, as opposed to paying $300,000 a week for someone who is a dud, Chelsea or Liverpool.
I do agree with that. But a 10 million pound Luka Milivojevic, who was playing in the Champions League, so that's a given, right? So he should come in and do well. He's a good player. But you can go and spend a £9 million on Alexander Sorloth, and regardless of what he's doing in Turkey...
Yeah, he was no good for us.
He was not.
I agree. I 100% agree.
That's
a good one.
At the same token, who has been arguably our best player this season?
Guaita.
Jordan, are you?
Three players this season, our best three, who are...
Yeah, Cahill, are you in Guaita?
Two free transfers over 30.
Yeah, Gary Cahill just brought this professionalism to it, and Guaita is obviously a very good keeper, and keepers can go a bit longer. But Alexander Sorloth is a perfect example. So we spent 9 million on Alexander Sorloth. If we were buying Alexander Sorloth this season in the summer, for example, with the finances it were, I would guarantee you we're not spending 9 million on it. You're half that.
Well, they'd want half it, so we'd offer 15.
Yeah, exactly. But you see what I mean? Like that's the type of deals that will be out there now. There would be, because football clubs need the money. Simple. What about you, Mark? What do you think? Roy in, Roy out. Where are you sitting?
A tricky one, isn't it, for a lot of reasons. This window is going to be very odd and different, and figures that will be made up on the spot or will be revealed due to COVID. Different clubs would have suffered differently financially. That's really going to put a spanner in the works, I think, with, you know, A, what clubs projected they might spend, what they thought they might get for players that they wanted to sell, what they now resided to spending, very different to what they thought they were initially. I don't know where Palace lies and all that. I hear off one of the other pods, Back of the Nest or something, that one of the guys knows someone in the finance side of things, or I might even do a podcast on football finance. And apparently we're in reasonable nick, even though we lost 30 or 35 million pounds.
Yeah, I heard that's Kevin Day from five year plan.
Yeah, that's it. I don't really know. The Americans come in and Parrish comes out and says, you know, if you're not going forward, you're going backwards in this league, and we hear all the right things. Then we don't see anything, you know. Like, Roy takes a bit of a pilloring about it all. I think the dude's done tremendous with the funds and resources offered to him. I think he's fought most of this fight with one hand tied behind his back, which is not bad for a bloke well into his 70s. He's still got a great head of hair for his age. I would have ripped it all out by now if I had to just deal with the quagmire that he would on a weekly basis. And, you know, I don't know. Look, yeah, you get to stay in the league and we're not just scraping in. Well, we're 4 or 5 games out. We're safe. So up until, you know, the restart, we had the most points ever in the Premier League for that time in the season. We're not talking around 8 or 9. That was up to, like, you know, 28th or 29th round or whatever it was. So, but, you know, then you watch the highlights from the Villa game, you go, oh, yeah, no, fuck it, Roy out. So, I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts for this window and there's no one easy fix. What I think, what I would love and is ideal to me, and probably not plausible or sufficient to do at all with a Premier League club, is keep Roy for the remainder of his contract. So you're not paying out the $4 million there. You're pretty much going to say, all right, we're going to get a little bit of the kitty to freshen up the squad. I'm not sure who we're going to sell. Get someone in like, you know, a Popper or a Jedi or something in that time under his tutelage. And when his contract's up, maybe a bit like what John Terry is doing at the moment or what Lampard did. And then, and you know, get him in and around the system. And then when Roy the Boy goes, unleash our new question mark, whoever that person is, to have a crack. It's been done here in the AFL. Mick Malthouse did it with Buckley. Very good changeover. Again, AFL is not Premier League, but I think something like that is at least worth considering.
I would be very, very surprised if that isn't one of the considerations. I would be very surprised if everything isn't on the table at the moment and being put in front of Roy, like, you can walk away, go just step up and just finish the last season as DOF. I'm sure if this performance and everything carries on as much as they want to, I'm sure the sacking him is on the table. Do I think they'll do it? Probably not, but I would be very surprised if it's not. But I'm delighted to hear that all four of us are in unanimous agreement that he has to go. So well done, guys. Thank you very much.
Sorry, that was Rob we were talking about that has to go, yeah.
Hey.
So I always get my B's and my Y's confused. I'm
I know. But look, Mark did make a good point. He has a great head of hair. I had a great head of hair before I started watching Roy manage Palace, and then
still gone.
I did actually have the same hair as Ned, and then I've had to sit through that shite for 3.5 years. Well, moving on from that, we have had some stunning news over the past week. We have been awarded Category 1. Our academy has been called as a Category 1, so this is huge, huge. And for the Aussies amongst us, mainly you, Mark, I'm sure you've seen a list of players that have come out of South London. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Tammy Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi, all at Chelsea, Jadon Sancho, the list goes on and on and on. It's a hotbed of footballing talent. Dale Quarty slipped through the net, unfortunately. But this is huge for the club. Huge for the club. And one that we can get excited about. apart from the idiots on Twitter that now think because we've been awarded category one status, all of a sudden tomorrow we're going to have a whole influx of Premiership ready 18-year-olds running around on the park. But
are we not?
I applied and they said no. Huge news, great news for Paddington going forward. A great legacy that Parrish is going to leave us with, no matter what happens. Yeah. How big is this?
No, it is big. Like I said on the WhatsApp, I was chatting in another WhatsApp group with some friends at home, so all South Londoners, and somebody made a comment about what's our academy doing, and me and my other Paddy's friends were actually in the process of going Cat 1. So hopefully that's good. And another one of my friends popped up and said, you know, all the best kids from his son's team, I mean, they're only under nines or whatever, but still, they get approached by Palace and they get approached by Chelsea and they go Chelsea because Chelsea are not that far away and they are Cat 1 and it's Chelsea. So you go to Chelsea. The parents look at it and go, Cat 1, they go to Chelsea. So this is big. It means that we don't miss out on the kids, basically, and they are kids, but they're kids who could develop into something. We just have to look through our history to say, you know, we do produce good youngsters anyway. So AWB, Wilf, Ben Watson, you know, they're good players who have come through our academy.
Victor Moses,
yeah.
Punch?
Klein.
No, well, he pissed off the Millwall, so don't talk about him. And I think it is important that we have this. I mean, Chelsea have an agreement at the moment where they get good footballers and they ship them off to my old school. And the school benefits, they win a couple of tournaments and these guys get a good education and then piss off back to Chelsea. Palace have tried doing stuff like that, but no one really that good enough goes through the books. So the only person I did that with was Victor Moses and Lee Hills, if you remember Lee Hills, the left back.
Lee Hills. Well, yeah. That's what he had.
And actually, in one year, they had Victor Moses, Lee Hills, and somebody Smith, maybe Ryan Smith, Adam Smith, I can't remember, all in the same year. So, funny enough, they won everything. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is it is good. It doesn't mean we'll have an immediate influx of players, but it does mean that we have a better ability to attract and retain. And I think, no matter what industry you work in and what you do, two key words are attract and retain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Marky Mark, how good is it?
Yeah, it's good news and something concrete and tangible that we can all admire and sink our teeth into, because there's been a fair bit spruced about the club, new stand, this and that, you know, the academy and it getting Cat 1 and lots of things just weren't really coming to fruition. So it's nice to have that lockdown and a sure thing. And as Dale said, it's obviously becomes far more attractive to local talent in the South London catchment area. As Parrish said, as a club, we have a tremendous footprint there. So by virtue of having a Cat 1 club, I think we can certainly capitalise on that. And, you know, what was already a reasonable sort of youth system and producing some quality players, you know, hopefully we can produce even more and some guys we can hang on to and just long-term become more attractive and start doing the business. Obviously, it goes down very well at a club when you've got some homegrown talent. You know, it goes great with the fans and why wouldn't it? So, yeah, very good that that's happening and long may it continue.
Just very quickly, Mark, on that point, there is some outrageous stat about Man United who have gone, God, I think like since 1990 or something stupid like that, when they've had at least one academy product. In the match,
it's a tradition because there was
yeah, right, every year.
What, no, every in match. Every squad, every match.
Every match, they squad.
Because there was a big bit. Everyone was worried when they had Jose Mourinho in charge because he had one match day where they thought there might be a chance that because he sold a few of their academy players and there was sort of a point where they were like, oh no, he's not going to have someone in the match day squad, but he did. So.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, that's pretty huge. So that sort of speaks for itself. And obviously a lot cheaper to produce young Carlton Biome at £87 million.
So it is. Ned,
yeah,
good news, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think in terms of, I mean, we've just been talking about the types of players that we want to sign and bring people in. I think investing in the academy is the smart option, because it means that the players that we get coming through are free. Admittedly, if any of them are any good, then we're going to have a fair few more sort of AWB sort of, you know, sob stories in terms of they'll, you know, love us and leave us. But as long as they love us and leave us with 50 million quid in the bank, you know, we can sort of fix our broken heart with cash. but yeah, so I think it's great. We can, you know, we've got that hotbed of talent where we are. So it gives us not only access to good quality players, but also potentially a good quality revenue stream. I mean, it's not, you know, people don't want to be selling clubs as per se, but I mean, you look at, I mean, Sporting Lisbon, for example, that you gave before, produces shitloads of phenomenal players, plays them for 2 years and then sells them off for astronomical fees. Southampton did the same thing for a bit with all of their players that they had come through. So, I mean, it just sort of gives you that little bit of extra sort of financial security. You know that if you haven't got a player, you can't sign a player that, you know, the kid coming through from the academy is not a numpty and can play. And it also means that when you are a bit short on cash, you're generally going to have a few players worth a little bit that you can sort of move on and set yourself back up again. So, yeah, for the long-term future of the club, I think that's as good an investment as we could possibly want to make. So really, really good news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Ned, you make a good point about the money. It's not just selling players. If you look at, I know it's been widely vaulted how many players Chelsea have on loan, but if you look at their academy system, they've got a lot of those young boys on loan. So last year, I mean, Tammy Abraham was on loan somewhere, like Ruben Loftus-Cheek's been at us. Reece James was on loan. That Tomori was on loan. I mean, they're all getting loan fees for all those players. I deliberately didn't say him. But they're getting loan fees, and all these boys are going to championship clubs who can afford to pay a loan fee and cover those. Wouldn't be big wages, but wages nonetheless. And then they do well, and they come back, and they can see are they good enough for the Premiership, which, as proven by how well they've done this year, most of them were already. And I think we've been linked with everyone. But there's is it Conor Gallagher? They've got a player who's played for Swansea this season and Charlton in the Championship and has done apparently very well there. But that's another one, right? So if we can start having those players come through and, you know, get those loans out there. I mean, how many of our under-23s actually went on loan? You know, we had high hopes for someone like a Kean Flanagan, we've got Naya Kirby. None of them, Sadiq Kaikai, none of them really went on loan. Kaikai went to Shrewsbury a couple of times, but Kirby went to Blackpool. They're not all out there. So, it's a fantastic thing. And well done to everyone involved in that. Absolutely fantastic. Very excited. All right, guys. Now, we've got a little bit of time if you want. We can end it there. Or, I mean, has anyone got anything for the Culvert quiz?
Well, I've still got my Premier League quiz sitting here that we didn't do when we did our best 11. If you're super keen,
don't have to.
I had to hunt it down, but it's there if you want it.
Let's do this. We can do a few of them.
Yeah, all right. Well, 10 questions.
This would be good.
10 questions. It's and Mark, so it's all from the Premier League era. So
right,
we're not going ancient. I'm gonna make it competitive. Just so that Rob can. So if you know the answer, yell your name out, and I'll keep a score. And then, regardless of what it is, I'll just say Rob's lost at the end.
Quickly, Ned, is this just Premier League since it started, or Palace/Premier League, or
Palace in the Premier League? Yep.
Okay. All right.
So, question one: call your name out if you know the answer. Or just yell the answer out, I guess. Doesn't really matter. which members of the current squad have the most career Premier League yellow cards? So which member of the current of our current squad has the most Premier League yellow cards?
Gary Cahill. Just ever.
Ever. In the Premier
Gary
League.
Gary Cahill.
But it's not Gary Cahill. He's got 38. There are
Luka
three
Milibre.
Players above him. No, he's nowhere near it.
Wilfred Zaha.
No, nowhere near it. You've got to think players that have been around the Premier League a bit longer.
James McCarthy.
McCarthy has got 45. He is one behind their our leader.
Saka?
Nah.
Doesn't play enough, mate.
Yeah.
It's same position, though.
Oh, Tompkins.
Correct. Ironically, you say MacArthur and McCarthy are the same player. They've even got the same number of yellow cards in the Premier League.
Oh my
God. 45 apiece.
Literally the same player.
Not be divided.
Same amount of goals, I reckon, as well.
This season, who's taken the most shots for us?
None of them. None of them. No one shoots. We don't want to shoot, so none of them.
Yeah, what do you got, Mark?
I got a PVA, just to be stupid.
Yeah, no.
Wilf?
Wilf is second with 52. That includes yesterday's game. So there's one person who's had more shots. They've had one more shot than Wilf.
Yeah, Rob, you got a free hit, bro.
It's either Ghanaian Prince or...
I don't think it is him, because I think I saw a stat that he doesn't shoot that much.
Yeah.
What was that, Dale?
Well, the throw man.
Nah.
Wow.
There
you go.
Go on, Rob.
I'm
going
to go Ayew. I've got to say Ayew, but
I don't like this. Rob's now two. He's now two from two. Jordan Ayew, 53 shots. One ahead of Zaha with 52. Benteke third with 41. All right, going back a little bit. Gonzalo Sarondo is the only Palace player to do what for Palace twice in the Premier League?
That is twice.
He's the only person who's done it twice for Palace in the Premier League.
The punt, Mark.
Yep.
Be sent off after coming off the bench.
Just stop. Be sent off. We'll roll with my good stuff.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. I just got fancy.
Point for Mark. We'll give it to you. Well done.
Hey, woo!
Good job. This is a specific question for Rob, but anyone can answer, but Rob will enjoy it.
Roy Hodgson out.
Oh, unfortunately, you added out at the end. Under which manager did Palace score their highest total number of goals in a Premier League season?
Dale.
Yes, Dale.
Roy Hodgson.
Well done, Dale. Good stuff. 51.
Knowledge.
All right. Before the lockdown, who was the last player to score against Palace?
Oh, that's a great question. I like that one. It's 3-1-0.
James Howland is sitting there, like, screaming. Yeah,
absolutely.
I thought you said James Howland. I was like, Jesus Christ, that is it.
Yeah, I can't accept that as an answer. We got to think back of the results.
Oh, God.
Do we need clues?
Was it a Sheffield United player?
It was not a Sheffield United player.
What was the score against Sheffield United?
I don't remember.
We lost 1-0. We lost 1-0. Guaita threw the ball in the net.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. I sort of blanked that out of my memory. Thanks, Rob.
You're welcome.
I got no idea.
It was... we lost the game 3-1. And it was the last goal in 3-1.
Yeah, we lost quite heavily-ish. And then...
And then we went on our little run of four games without conceding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It was against Everton.
Oh.
Okay. Calvert-Lewin?
Yes, correct. Damn it, Rob. You're supposed to lose.
You're ruining it.
Huh? Oh, did you? Perfect. Yep. Nah, done. Sorry. So, Rob, you lose that point.
I don't even bother arguing.
So it must have been the connection, Dale. Yeah, no, we'll definitely give you that point. So that's 2-2 with you and Rob, and Mark's on one. Okay.
Has anyone else noticed that Rob's in his dressing gown?
Yeah, do you not notice this?
I've known it from the start.
Yeah, I had a shower at 5:30.
Very nice.
Rob Hefner tonight hosting the pod.
Absolutely. Mate. All right. Question 6. This current stint in the Premier League, in this current stint in the Premier League, who scored our first goal back?
Or after lockdown?
No. As in since we got promoted.
Our Dwight first Gale goal back up. Penalty.
No.
Oh. Kevin Phillips.
Nah. We lost 2-1. Hold on. We lost 2-1 to Stoke.
I'll have a punt just because he retired. Jedi?
Nah. We all wanted him back for good.
What?
It was a terrible song.
Back for good?
Yeah.
Now I can't stop thinking of the take that song back for good.
Yeah, correct. Now slap a player's name in there.
Shamak.
Yeah, well done, Dale.
Done, mate.
And no, I'm not going to sing it. In that same season, we secured Premier League survival for the first time ever with a 1-0 win against who?
Swansea.
What's that? I heard Swansea. Chelsea from Dale, that's wrong. I heard Swansea from Rob, that's wrong.
We did beat Chelsea 1-0, though.
Yeah, John Terry own goal.
Yep. Yeah. Scoring goals for Palace, John Terry.
Oh, no, Swansea was the last day of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I want when we... it was Miller Jedinak scored the goal, penalty, top corner.
Not West Ham, that was the year after.
Yeah, no, it was West Ham. I'll have to give you that, Rob. Well done. Yeah.
Can you just note how our captains keep taking penalties as pulling rank?
Yeah.
In fairness, both Luka Milivojevic and Miller Jedinak are very good at penalties.
That's very true.
So I'm happy with them to pull rank if they're going to keep scoring.
Well, Popovic, he took penalties.
Popovic, no, not much good at penalties.
He's
okay, but he's not. My penalty standard is now Milo Jedinak, so basically everyone's not much good. All right, against which team have Palace scored the most Premier League goals?
Mark, Everton.
Nah, Everton, we scored 20. They are fifth.
They don't score many goals.
Start guessing, teams.
Liverpool.
Correct.
Nice. 28
goals we've scored against Liverpool. We scored 24 against West Ham, 23 against Leicester, 23 against Arsenal, and 20 against Everton.
We did have a ridiculous record. I mean, we at one stage took the most points off Liverpool than any other team in Premier League era.
Yeah, we... other than Manchester United, our points per game against Liverpool, I'm pretty sure in the Premier League, is higher than any other team.
Yeah.
I may have made that up, but I'm pretty sure that's accurate. That might just be at Anfield. I don't know. Anyway, I'd ask a bonus question, but you're probably not going to get it. I'll throw it in there. Only side that we've never scored against or picked up a point against in the Premier League.
Oh, so someone's been up there that once.
Yeah, long time ago when we were shit. Got relegated. Yeah. We got relegated and were shit. No, starts with the same letter, though.
What did you just say, Rob?
He said Bradford.
Birmingham?
Keep guessing Barnsley. B team. Yeah, well done. But that was a bonus question, Rob, so unfortunately you don't get a point. All right. Which team have we beaten the most in the Premier League?
Leicester?
Long ago.
Correct.
I can't remember any of them.
All right. So we are currently, with one question left, locked up at 4 apiece between Dale and Rob. Mark's got one. If Mark gets this right, I'm going to say it's worth 4 points, so he wins.
Excellent.
If Rob gets it right, he gets no points. And if Dale gets it right, he gets a point. Okay? So it's between Mark and Dale here to see who wins. Not that hard a question. Who is the only player to score a Premier League
Calvert
hat-trick for Crystal Palace? It's not Calvert. I should have ended with
Yannick Bolasie against Sunderland.
Sunderland, damn it.
I definitely heard Dale say it first. So congratulations, Dale. Rob, you tried, mate.
Well, it's a taking part of the counts. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah,
thank
no,
you for
good.
Having me.
Yeah. you tried, mate, and that's what's important.
I've had good a great stuff. Day.
Excellent. All right, well, that's the end of my quiz. I can throw that out.
That was good. Thanks, mate.
That's cool.
I've been sitting around right. my house for about the last 3 months.
Check it out, Matt.
Some proper noodle scratches in there.
Yeah, it's good. Well, that brings us to the end of another very exciting edition of Exiled Eagle. So exciting. I did it in my pajamas. I know. Go on. Sorry, Marky Mark.
Yeah, just want a quick mention, mate. Just with a little bit of Australian flavour for the pod, given we do record down under. The girls at it again. Our national goalkeeper, Lydia Williams, has also signed for Arsenal. So there now with Steph Catley. Mackenzie Arnold has signed for West Ham. Kai Simon has
taken
signed
the Premier
with
League.
Yeah, has signed with PSV. And Hayley Rasso has signed another 1 year extension at Everton. So bringing our Aussie girls to a total of 8 in the FAWSL, which is pretty cool. And yeah, as I said, they're kind of mirroring the men's golden generation 15 odd years ago when we had sort of.
Did we mention Ellie Carpenter on the last pod? Was that there?
Yeah, it was him to Leon.
Yeah, off to Leon.
What we haven't mentioned is is that Australia and New Zealand successful in the 2023 World Cup bid, which is obviously great news.
International football might not be on by then, but
yeah,
we got it.
The only thing that I've said to people about this, which I think is really important, is, as you said, I think I said it at the time, last pod, I work in cricket, we've had a Women's World Cup. Over here, we had a world record attendance for a women's game, and it was brilliant. Unfortunately, it was in February, so it was the end of the season, and we saw no follow-on from all the joy of girls seeing their heroes play cricket. Football World Cup is going to be in July. Season will be midway through, hopefully. And by the end of the tournament, it will be August. We need to, the FFA need to ensure there is a legacy for women's football in Australia. And otherwise, it means nothing.
That's all right. We'll just win it. We'll win it, Dale.
Well, winning is
that'll,
fine. But
that'll create the legacy, mate. We'll just win the thing.
The women won the cricket. Winning is fine. But if there's nowhere for these girls to go and play, if at the time they see Sam Kerr win the World Cup and they think, this is great, I now want to go and play football, and club registrations are closed because it's that time of year. A year's a long time, 9 months is a long time for 8, 9, 10-year-olds to keep an interest. So it's brilliant, they've won it, I can't wait for it, I think it's going to be brilliant, I think Australia are going to be there or thereabouts, I just hope there's a legacy.
Yep. Bring back the summer comps.
As long as there's games at Gosford so I can watch the football whilst there's two sources down the other end of the pitch at the World Cup. I mean,
if the sauce bottles don't get a run at the World Cup, I don't know why they bothered hosting it here.
Get the Master Foods ketchup and mustard down the end there.
As long as the Gosford marching band is not there, happy days.
No, as long as the most annoying people in the world. No, don't worry about them. As long as the bloke that was there that's going to stand in the goal bow, in the goal mouth for 20 minutes on crutches, as long as he makes an appearance again, everything will be right.
Can't wait for us to showcase as many inflatable giant condiments as we can on the world stage.
You've got the big banana, the big thing.
The big everything.
And you've got the big sauce bottles.
Yeah.
That's it.
See them all.
Any more for any more, fellas?
I'm good.
Nah.
I wasn't asking you anyway. Dale?
All good.
Beautiful. Well, guys, thank you very much for tonight. Always enjoyable to chat to you. I'm probably not even going to bother watching you tonight. Oh, I will. I will. I'm an idiot.
Gosh,
I really don't want to. I really don't want to. We've got 3 games left of the season. 3 games left of Roy Hodgson's tenure, hopefully. Roy, it's been great. But, you know, it's time to go. So, from everyone at Exiled Eagle, thank you for listening. Dale, Mark and Ned, thank you very much for joining me. And I wish you all adieu.